Hello and welcome to That's a Thing, a sometimes belated, already outdated guide to your teens, tweens, and everything under 20. I'm Elizabeth.
And I'm Karen, and we're a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network powered by ATB. Speaking of which. Before we go into the show, I just wanted to ask our listeners for a favor. Is that okay?
Yep. This was pre-planned. I don't know what you want from me.
All right. What I want from not you, but our listeners, is to go to albertapodcastnetwork.com/survey to fill out a short questionnaire. It won't take you long. If you fill it out before June 17th, 2019, you can also choose to enter your name in a draw for $100.
That's money.
Yes. But most of all, you would win our undying gratitude, which is worth more than $100.
In the afterlife, where mom is judge, jury, and executioner.
Please go to albertapodcastnetwork.com/survey. Thank you.
Cool. So I'm glad that I put that sometimes belated intro disclaimer thing, because it has been a while.
Yes. It's been a minute. Isn't that what the kids say?
No.
No.
It's what your millennial friends say, I think.
Okay. What caused our delay?
I was playing the glorious role of Cloud Number 7 in the Ross Shep High School production of The Drowsy Chaperone, so I was unable to scramble together an episode of the podcast.
You were not just Cloud Number 7. What else were you?
I feel like it's perhaps a confusing role name. I was Caucasian Lady. I was horribly typecast, and my career will never recover. And I was also an ensemble member. It was a pretty fun time.
Yes. If you don't know The Drowsy Chaperone, Caucasian Lady is a comical role in a strange musical interlude in the middle of the show that's kind of a joke on the King and I. And I don't know. It's very funny, but also very... It has to be played well.
It's a choice. And our director made that choice.
Yeah, but it was a good choice, and you did amazing. I loved your performance, but of course I would.
Biased. Okay. Can't get honest reviews in this business. Anyway, I do have a bit of a doozy of a topic today.
Oh.
Are you tired of corporate Twitter accounts posting pictures of their waifus? Does watching Burger King coax Sunny D through a depressive episode make you inexplicably angry? Was capitalism a mistake?
Yes? I don't know.
Yes. Yes, it was. And you aren't alone. The marketing trend of corporations tweeting like people appears to be winding to its terrifying conclusion. Wendy's clapping back at McDonald's no longer feels like a cute game between employees just like us. It's a deliberate strategy approved by a board of directors. And, like, knowing that makes it feel uncomfortable and Black Mirror-esque in a really unpleasant way. So we're just kind of uncomfortable, and corporations aren't people, no matter how hard they try.
Also, legally, corporations are people. But anyway.
Yes. But morally, they aren't. Okay. Do you have any experience or opinions on this kind of personal Twitter marketing that's been going on?
Well, I mean, it comes across my consciousness now and then, where there'll be an exchange or a joke that is appreciated by many people, and so I will see that. Actually, probably the ones that I notice the most are... sports accounts tweeting each other, like corporate sports accounts.
Yes, like the whole gritty thing.
Yeah, the whole gritty thing, and the marketing teams for the teams that are left in the playoffs will go back and forth with each other. And I don't know, it's like, it's better than them just pushing out, our next game is on May 14th, right?
Yeah. I mean, my favorite sports Twitter account is still, did the Oilers win? Which just tweets yes or no based on the correct answer. I haven't had to watch a hockey game in 2 years. It's really nice.
Very efficient.
Yeah, but with this strategy like sinking into the uncanny valley, businesses need a new technique for conquering the ad block using Patreon-supporting emotionally exhausted teen and young adult community, right?
Yes.
So the obvious choice is appeals to authority, which we've been using for forever, right? So that comes in the form of influencer sponsorships. Like Starbucks has started doing a lot of promotion deals with beauty gurus and drag queens trying to appeal to what I call the girls and gays demographic.
Okay.
People who watch Drag Race, basically.
Right.
And so Starbucks has been doing that. A lot of cosmetic companies, health companies, clothing companies, fitness companies will send sponsorship packages and have sponsorship deals and everything. The infamous Fyre Festival, which has a documentary on Netflix that is giving those people more money, so don't watch it. The infamous Fyre Festival, it marketed itself almost solely via influencer support. That's a big beat that I got from that documentary you shouldn't watch.
But you did?
Yes.
Yeah.
Twice. But what's the downside of this strategy? It's expensive, right? Many influencers actually have managers. There's an industry around this now, largely being run by Jake Paul. everything's connected. But it's a business where if somebody tries to scam an influencer or lower a price or anything, they'll probably be called out publicly and maybe even blacklisted from the influencer community, which will damage your reputation. What else can damage your reputation? YouTube scandals.
That's true. Before you go into YouTube scandals, though, can I just make a plea for not all influencers?
Yes.
Okay. Well, because one of our colleagues on the Alberta Podcast Network is Linda Huang, and she has a podcast called Don't Call Me a Guru about social media strategy. And she herself is an influencer. Now, she's not an influencer of the with millions and millions of followers, say, and so she's not in that realm where, you know, someone can make or break a product just by mentioning it once on their Instagram or whatever. But she does good business in letting people know about the things that she likes, and she does it ethically and effectively, I would say.
Yes, and lots of people do that. Mm-hmm. And if your business does their research, they'll find good people like Linda.
Yes.
Which is a good job from your marketing department. Businesses are lazy and like numbers, so that doesn't usually happen per se. And that's how you got the James Charles situation. Tell me what you remember about me explaining the James Charles situation to you.
Barely anything. Okay, he's a makeup artist.
Yes.
Okay. That's all I remember.
You don't remember what happened to him in any way, shape, or form? You just, James Charles is a makeup artist. And it's scandalo.
And there's a whole, well, that's not scandalous, but there's like, there's drama and he's losing followers. So, but tell me the whole story.
Yes. So James Charles is a 19-year-old YouTube makeup artist, one of the most subscribed people in the community initially. He was friends with this lady named Tati Westbrook. Tati releases a 45-minute long video breaking up with James Charles in terms of their friendship, accusing him of harassing straight guys. He's gay. Apparently he prefers straight guys. It's like a whole complicated, confusing thing that I think is very dumb. But another aspect of that was Tati has a vitamin company called, let me check because of course I don't know this, Halo Beauty Vitamins, which is a very influencer vitamin name. And she's upset because her close good friend James promoted Sugar Bear Hair Vitamins, which is a direct competitor. So Sugar Bear Hair went from, here's this guy who has a lot of followers, let's do a sponsorship deal, to everybody screaming at the guy for doing that sponsorship deal because look at your best friend who has vitamins, what are you doing, right?
Right.
And so without warning, Sugar Bear Hair ended up trapped in like this huge controversy. Like, how would you feel if you had that like normal sponsorship deal, and then everything exploded, and the guy you sponsored with lost 2 million subscribers in 2 days, right?
Like, yeah, that would be very vexing. These people might even have that written into their contract, like, if you do something stupid and you lose all your followers, we will know that this contract is null and void. I don't know.
Maybe Logan Paul clause.
Yeah. But maybe people should, because these people are very, I was going to say these people are very young and immature, which is not fair, right? Just because they're young doesn't mean they're immature.
Yeah. Tati's 39 years old or something.
Okay. So some of these people are old and immature. But no, like, it just feels like you should go, as a brand, go into this with your eyes open and realize that you're buying supposed authenticity, and sometimes people are authentically mad at each other in real life, and it's gonna blow back on your product.
Yeah, it's fair.
Maybe they even want this. I mean, you wouldn't have even heard about this vitamin if all this stuff hadn't happened.
I mean, they get promoted by the Kardashians a lot, so I'd heard of them, but that's because I'm like pseudo millennial scum, so it's excusable that you haven't. But getting back to that point, I would like to talk about that idea a little bit more after the ad break.
So we're going to do marketing? Okay. Well, I feel like...
Fear time.
Yeah. I hope that we don't have some, you know, tea spilling here that falls onto our sponsor here. But this episode of That's a Thing is brought to you by the Edmonton Public Library, which is home to the Overdue Finds podcast. The most recent episode is all about the Muppets. Speaking of tea, because of that meme, right?
Yes.
Yes.
That's pretty good. That took me a while. It's like when I explain a new meme to you and there's this long pause.
We will link to Kermit sipping tea in the show notes. Kermit is my favorite Muppet, by the way. Who is your favorite Muppet?
I had a fear of the Muppets when I was going through elementary school, so I never really picked one I liked because I kept my lights on in fear of one eating me in my sleep. But they seem pretty cool now. So
you should listen to the latest Overdue Finds, and you will have a brand new appreciation for all the Muppets, and you won't be scared anymore because you're big now.
Thanks.
Also, Edmonton Public Library makes it possible for us to watch old movies on Canopy just with our library card, right?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. I'm using it for a school project. It's very good.
It is very good. And we watched Charlie Chaplin's The Gold Rush the other night.
Yeah.
And we've seen some good stuff there. You can find more about Canopy at edmonton.canopy.com, and that's Canopy with a K. And you can find the excellent Overdue Finds podcast at epl.ca/podcast.
Okay, so like we said before, a lot of people have heard the name Sugar Bear Hair since the controversy, right? And if you believe that any press is good press, you might want to start a scandal of your own.
Oh.
Yeah. So say you make an advertisement that features Colin Kaepernick, for example, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right-wing Twitter will get very mad at you. Reddit posts will be made. The three people still on Tumblr will reblog or whatever it is they do. The point is, the discourse will be hot and your stocks will possibly be raised, right? That's kind of what you want.
Okay, but that Nike campaign that showed Colin Kaepernick was not cynical. I don't think it was cynical. I don't think they were doing that to court controversy. No. They were saying, if you don't like this, tough.
I just think if they thought it would have actually damaged their business to take a strong stance, they wouldn't have done it because they're a company.
Yeah, that's true. But are they, is that bad?
No.
Okay.
But it's a thing. It's a marketing strategy they're using, right? Your company is now hashtag woke. Ta-da! Watch as the young liberals devour your redesigned Pride Skittles. No rainbow, because the rainbow belongs to the gays. This is a marketing campaign I saw
Really?
Yes, in a London Drugs, in public, just sitting there. The Skittles no longer have rainbow on it because only one rainbow matters during Pride Month. Woke. Wow, I feel so seen. And your business is one of the good ones. It probably feels good for you, too, right? All these people who are buying your stuff and saying, hey, you're great, right? It's good. And, like, the four right-wing people screaming at you on Twitter are hilarious, so it doesn't really matter. Like, watching people smash their Keurig machines is very cathartic. Watching people burn their Nikes while they're still on their feet, like, it's comedy gold. And they'll buy more Nikes anyway because boycotting doesn't work.
Right?
So, yeah, you're one of the good ones. You stand up for the little guy, and you discriminate against your pregnant employees.
Does Nike do that?
I have seen the articles, right?
Mm-hmm.
The problem with being hashtag woke is you have to remain hashtag woke in all aspects of your business, right? The hashtag woke community doesn't appreciate workplace discrimination, racist CEOs, child labor, dumping large amounts of waste into bodies of water, all those things that companies like to do sometimes.
Sometimes.
It makes us uncomfortable, you know? Very cancelable, not ideal, viva la revolution, bring out the guillotines, all that fun stuff, right? So it kind of gets teens to buy until everybody actually looks at what your business does and goes, never mind, let's try an ineffective boycott. So not great, right? So then what do I think companies are going to do instead now that this isn't working and the Twitter accounts have stopped working and James Charles keeps messing up for you and all that stuff, right? So we're going to talk to what I think might happen to marketing on the internet in the ad block age after the ad break.
Okay. I'm so glad that we're not selling products today, but I don't know. I don't know how the sponsor is going to be feeling about this. Well, let me tell you, this is an authentic and good thing that I can tell you, because this episode of That's the Thing is also brought to you by Unit B Coworking, where we are recording this very podcast.
Yes.
Synergy.
Very good.
Unit B is a multi-company co-working space focused on helping people pursue their passions and making Edmonton its creative best. You will join a tight-knit group of freelancers, startups, and established organizations all dedicated to getting things done. I am one of those people.
Yes.
Yes. As is Mac Mail, who you might know from the Speaking Municipally podcast, and who is the force behind Taproot Edmonton, another adventure in new media that I'm involved in. So you could see us if you were, if you came by Unit B, as in addition to a whole bunch of other amazing people. We are in the historic McKenney Building on 104th Street in downtown Edmonton, and you could book a tour today at unitb.ca.
That sure was a good thing.
Yes. Okay. Was that the future of advertising? I suspect not.
Yeah, no.
No.
We are advertising to our listener base, which I hope is not a jury of my peers, because I will get laughed out of the room. I am a traitor to my generation. All that fun stuff. But anyway, how do you market to my generation, right? You kind of have to let them do the marketing for you.
Mm.
90s/2000s kids, and I'm talking like 95 to 2008, somewhere in that range, we offer a surprisingly large nostalgia market. Like, you wouldn't think it because we haven't had much time to develop nostalgia.
What are you longingly looking back at? You were like born yesterday, almost literally.
SpongeBob, Plants vs. Zombies, Minecraft, Shrek. So much Shrek, Lazy Town. We all have a basic knowledge of these entities, all the people from this age bracket. So they're kind of ideal fodder for remix culture. And so these things show up again and again in memes. Like, there was recently a Plants vs. Zombies meme cycle, right? And it's like, I play Plants vs. Zombies, and I downloaded it, like, again in the last year or so, right? Because I felt nostalgic for the game I used to play on my iPad when I was like 12, right?
I know people who worked on Plants vs. Zombies. They would be horrified to think that this is like nostalgia. Like, hi, Steven. Sorry. But what?
It gets people to play it.
I guess so.
Yeah. The biggest entity this affects, though, is definitely Minecraft. There have been Minecraft memes, like, nonstop during 2019. Like, that's a primary meme source, and it's all sorts of different formats, but it's just a consistent theme, somehow revolves around base knowledge of Minecraft. And a lot of those memes say things like, I just re-downloaded Minecraft because I kept seeing memes about it, essentially, right? Like, oh, I felt sentimental about Minecraft. It has its 10-year anniversary. I'm going to download Minecraft and play it again, right? It is actually outperforming Fortnite. It has 91 million monthly players, even though it's 10 years old. And for a game, that's pretty impressive, right? Like, especially an online hosted one. So, or like an app. So. Right. And I think a lot of that success is owing to the fact that, especially recently, there's been a bump in mentions just via the meme culture and Reddit and stuff.
Okay, but is this engineered in any way by the company?
I don't think Minecraft has engineered this. I think this happened by accident. What I'm thinking is there going to be a way companies find to engineer this happening in a way that seems organic, right? Because it works. We find you and then we market you. Like, think about any cultural mainstay, Marvel movies. We basically put on a marketing campaign before every new Marvel movie comes out because everybody sees them. So you put up your fan theories and stuff and your little jokes on Reddit and you use a lot of images. And then you get to the day where you're allowed to put spoilers on. Like, they have a set date. It's very well organized. I'm kind of impressed. and then everybody's doing screen caps of the movie and little things from the movie. And you're like, oh, that looks interesting. I'm going to see it with my friend despite having not seen the other ones on Tuesday. Hi, Krista. Right? Like, it just permeates everything. There was a Duolingo meme like 2 months ago, right? The idea was if you aren't on Duolingo every day, you start to get these emails from Duolingo insisting that you go back and learn the rest of your Spanish.
Right.
And they have this unintentional but weirdly threatening vibe to them. So the meme was just images of the logo, which is an owl, like threatening to destroy your house. Like Spanish or perish. It's very good. Anyway, I didn't have Duolingo 2 months ago, but guess who has Duolingo now?
Really?
Yeah. Really? I was like, I need to brush up on my Spanish before I take the course again. This is the Spanish app, apparently. I'll have Duolingo now. It's free, right? I've watched ads on there. I've given them money by the fact that I've watched ads on there. And like, I got that because I kept seeing memes about it.
Okay. Well, okay. This is interesting. So part of me wants to say, who's getting paid here? The labor is being done for free by the people making memes and remixing and all that. And you're getting like marketed to, I don't know. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. People are giving away their labor, but I guess the other side of the sword is that the companies that are subjected to this sort of marketing by remix also have no control, like even less control than in an influencer campaign, right?
Yeah, there is zero control. Like there was the Starbucks cup in Game of Thrones a while ago. That's gone like hugely blown up, right? People talking about like that. That's not like. People keep mentioning Starbucks, and Starbucks might even get a bump from that. But it's also like Game of Thrones arranged their last season so poorly that they didn't notice and eliminate the obvious Starbucks cup in the scene, right?
Right. Yeah.
So it's just kind of like you can't really, at this point, choose what you get. But any press is good press. You're getting something, right?
And if you are a marketer, maybe what this tells you is that what you can do, you can't control the remix culture. You can't plant things deliberately in there and you cannot optimize it, right? Mm-hmm. The only thing you can do is create an enduring cultural artifact that appeals to people for a long time and that they associate something that you want to be associated, they associate something with it that you want to be associated with, and then you just hope that it happens.
Yeah, but like some of these internet marketing campaigns might have huge returns. There's been a push online for people to see Avengers Endgame 3 to 6 times because we really want it to overtake Avatar as the highest grossing film of all time.
Really?
Yeah, because Avatar's the highest grossing film of all time, and who remembers Avatar?
Lots of people remember.
Can you name any characters from Avatar?
No, I didn't see the movie, but I don't see any movies.
Okay, but you can name an Avenger.
Iron Man?
Yes.
Okay.
See? Avatar has grossed higher than any of those movies. And yet, like, you could name a Harry Potter character who isn't Harry Potter, I'm sure.
Yes.
Also higher grossing. Therefore, a film of more cultural significance than Avatar should be the highest grossing film of all time, and we will artificially engineer this outcome through hive mind behavior and the willingness to sit through a 3-hour movie 6 times.
And pay for it 6 times. That's yeah. Crazy. No, don't do that.
Avatar and Endgame are both owned by Disney.
Okay, but is this watch it 3 to 6 times so that we can overtake Avatar? Is that coming from the company in any way, or is it just the people?
It seems to be grassroots. Seems
to
be.
Is it though?
I think so.
Because these people are very devious. They, you know, this just reminded me of Blair Witch Project. Do you remember any? Do you know anything about that?
Do I remember anything about this movie from the 90s?
Do you know anything about this historic thing?
I know about the Blair Witch Project, yes.
Yeah. And so there was like a whole marketing campaign around that that purported to be treating whatever evil happens in that movie as a real thing, right? Mm-hmm. That this was almost like a documentary. That was part of the marketing, and it was meant to be difficult to trace back to the originators, although it was originated by the marketing team for that film.
Yeah, but like, I just don't see how they could have engineered this, because it seems like a very internet idea of a thing to support. It's like, let's not support Avengers Endgame because we think it's a good movie and everybody should see it. Let's support it because it's comparatively better than this other film that we have decided should not hold its crown any longer, right?
This also doesn't bode well for the sequels to Avatar that are supposedly coming.
Everybody finds it hilarious that they're trying to put out 5 sequels to Avatar when nobody can name a single character from the first Avatar. It's high quality content. But there is actually somebody I think has actively influenced the meme culture. It's everybody's favorite cave daddy, Elon Musk.
Why are we talking about him? I don't...
Because he feeds the memes, Mom.
He does? Okay, tell me
yes.
more.
Okay, so Elon Musk is very active on social media. We collectively believe, I don't know if this has been confirmed, but there's definitely a belief that he has a Reddit account that he actively browses meme pages on. And he also has like his active Twitter account and everything, right? And he plays along with and participates in the meme culture around him. So people make memes about Elon Musk because he tried to build a submarine to rescue people from a cave when they didn't need his help and then tried to take credit, right? He's hilarious if you don't think about the capitalist implications it has on our dying world. I'm having a fun time these last few months. Can you tell? But anyway, the point is, like, Elon Musk, he posts memes on his Twitter account that get posted onto MeIRL. And those things promote his products and goals. They promote SpaceX. They promote Tesla. And it's just on this page, and everybody's like, yeah, cool. We'll upvote it. Sounds great. The Twitter page that it trickles onto will like it. If it makes it onto the Instagram page these things trickle onto, people are going to like it, right?
Hmm.
But he's making that tweet. Like, a lot of these tweets are real, genuine Elon Musk tweets that you can go back to and find on his page that people just thought were funny, cool things Elon Musk said. But, like, he's a personal brand. Like, Elon Musk is basically his company in a lot of ways.
Well, he is, and to the detriment of the company, right?
Yeah.
So he has got in trouble with the Securities Commission for tweeting things that he, like, legally is not allowed to or supposed to. And he also doesn't seem to be a very stable individual, which is not good for making decisions about a big company that employs a whole bunch of people and has, like, things that they have to deliver to paying customers. Like, it feels as though his business is just him. Like, he's actually what James Charles was trying to do.
Yeah, he's selling himself to willing consumers, basically. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, like, if Reddit can embrace somebody like Elon Musk, how far are we from embracing, like, Walmart if Walmart figures out a way to, like, influence that, right? Like, you just have to, like, basically the formula is people have to start, like, somebody has to make a fairly popular meme about you, right? And then you have to react in the way that any other meme consumer would react and remix that. And then as long as you don't seem hip and stale and like an impersonator, like if you get somebody who's essentially experienced in the art to do it, then it's possible that that will just propagate. Like, and they'll essentially be taking the words that you carefully put in there and spreading them around and remixing them again. And nobody's going to be like, guys, we're spreading the ad that the company gave us, because it's like camouflaged perfectly into the system of media we already have. And I feel like if markets can tap into that might become a trend for a while. And I really don't want that to happen, because I like my memes and don't want them to be covered in capitalism.
Okay. I'm having a little bit of a 'twas ever thus moment here. So here's what came to mind when you were talking. Do you know the McDonald's jingle?
Ba 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 ba.
No, not that one. Way before that. From my youth, I should have said.
Elizabeth, do you know anything about this jingle from the 70s?
It might not be 70s, it might be 80s. Anyway.
No difference.
To all beef patties, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles, onions on a sesame seed bun. Okay, this was a commercial jingle.
Yes.
For the ingredients of a Big Mac. And it permeated the culture. Like, everybody can sing it. I can still sing it. I haven't heard it for 30 years, right? But it is in my head.
I'm sorry for all the listeners that Mom just earworm bombed.
So is that what you're talking about, except old school technology, or is what you're talking about something new?
Well, I'm talking about like you giving us the jingle and then us writing a better one for you over and over again, I guess.
Mm.
Like we do a hip hop remix of the jingle you just gave us and then insert it into country music somehow. And then like it just keeps going. Like it just spreads and spreads and broadens and broadens and then fades away like any other marketing campaign. But all the eyes on it and people involved are from the demographic you're trying to market to. Like, it's very targeted in a way which a company might find highly beneficial, right?
Right.
So, I don't know. As old people use the internet more, I become increasingly afraid of their influence and power in my domain. So this is probably a little bit of a paranoid episode, but I also think it's an interesting aspect, marketing dealing with everybody blocking their ads and ignoring them when they play and everything, right? Like, you have to get eyes on stuff somehow, and increasingly that seems like turning your business into a person and diving into the culture where it already exists. Mm-hmm. So
and turning your business into a person instead of hiring a person to be an influencer on your behalf, because that can go wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. This gives you more control in a way.
Mm-hmm. But you have to be hip with the kids, yo, which is hard.
Yeah.
Very hard.
Hire me, Walmart. Hire
Why
me.
Why do you want Walmart of all the companies? Is not one. Don't hire her. She
I
might
can
help
change
you.
Him.
Okay. Does that conclude your
I think
treatise?
That covers everything. Okay. I had to say, we can take off our tinfoil hats now and everything.
Well, that was very enjoyable. We will link to everything that we talked about that I can find in the show notes, including the McDonald's jingle. And you will find those show notes at thatsathing.transistor.fm. You can subscribe to our show. Well, you can subscribe to other people's shows, but we're just talking about ours.
Subscribe to your podcast.
Subscribe in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever else pods are cast. Even the CKUA app is an excellent way to find us and the other APN members. You can find us and the rest of those members as well at albertapodcastnetwork.com. And thanks to ATB again for making it possible for us to have this lovely community of people talking into microphones. We are on Twitter at That's a Thing YEG. Hey, if you're so good at marketing, market our podcast on Twitter with a meme or whatever.
I don't make them. I only consume them.
Okay, well, you consume enough, it'll come out your ears or something. Also, you can email us if you want it. That's a thing, yeg@gmail.com.
And make sure to do that survey.
Yes, do that survey. albertapodcastnetwork.com/survey. Good job.
I was listening.
Yeah. Is that everything?
I think that's everything.
Thanks, sweetheart.
Bye.